This podcast is brought to you by Villanova University on iTunes U. Please visit us on itunes.villanova.edu.
Okay, so morning, and for me this is a really great opportunity because I was an alum here at Villanova, graduated in 1996. College of Engineering, Electrical Engineering. Also, you know, when I was on campus, you know, all the cool kids were with school business, so it's nice to come back to come here. So, but what I want to talk about is, okay, I think most people in here have some tie-in with data, never realize, has an interest, but even more exciting than data is, of course, data governance, right? Nothing puts you to sleep more than talking about that. But actually, what I'm trying to talk about is how, you know, data governance, I think for most people, they kind of agree if they're in this industry, that it's important, but is it really something you want to focus on? Probably not. But there are some ways that you can make that all come together, not just through the bureaucracy and the heaviness of data governance, but there's some ways you can, through process and technology, make it maybe happen by happenstance, what you do. So I'm here, I work for Penn Medicine. And if you're not familiar with Penn Medicine, it's an academic medical center for the Philadelphia area, five hospitals. There are four in the Philadelphia area, three in the city, and Chester County Hospital is the fourth. And the fifth is Lancaster General at Lancaster County. Overall, my slides are a little out of date, but in total, it's a $7 billion operating revenue, nonprofit. So most of what is made goes back into research. It's a combination of, since it's an academic medical center, School of Medicine at University of Pennsylvania, and also the health system. So that combined is pretty much under the umbrella and trademark of Penn Medicine. Here's just more some information on Penn. But the group I work in right now at Penn Medicine is in the Data Analytics Center. So within the IS department at Penn, which is I think about 600 employees, maybe a little bit more, our group was within the IS department, and basically at the Data Analytics Center we provide data access to, whether it be to, as I have on the screen here, for research or operational needs or clinical needs. There's a whole host of needs for information and data, so we're here trying to facilitate how they can get access to the data to help them with whatever the mission is that they're trying to accomplish. And for us, the mission statement is just up here, but basically we're trying to help with various people at Penn Medicine to access, discover, and visualize data, whether it be clinical, research, or operational. So ultimately, we're trying to satisfy a whole breadth of people out there, which includes clinicians, researchers, corporate and admin. This would be an example like financial, HR, normal corporate departments you could think of, and analysts. Could be business analysts, could be clinical analysts, process improvement, all kinds of areas need information. And then what do we offer? So basically, like I mentioned, we offer ways of access into the data securely, because obviously security is a big deal with patient data. We take charge in our group to make sure that we're protecting the patient data that we have, but we also want to make sure that the people that could benefit from it appropriately for research or for quality improvement can have it, but it's a balance we have to walk there. And discovery, meaning okay, so maybe they don't want to, you don't know what you're looking for, you're trying to see if there's a reason, a way to improve a situation, or maybe there's an opportunity. Basically, some way to make sure that people can do dimensional analysis if they have to. And then visualization, how can you ultimately present this data back so that you don't spend a lot of time interpreting it, you can just move on and see it. This is just a summary of our team, pretty much. If you look at it laid out here, there are three parts. So I'll just point to this one screen. So we have one third of our team are researchers. These are people that will get a request from someone. It could be from anywhere in Penn Medicine. They want information. They submit a request, goes through process, I mean, a week or so, comes back. Some more complicated. Some are part of maybe a research request that's approved by the University of Pennsylvania school that say, okay, I'm going to do a presentation to see if I can find a cohort of patients that
Are they more susceptible to asthma in certain locations? Well, since we're trying to protect all the data within Penn Medicine, we have to have that approved before we can share information. But will these people will help out? Where to find the data? Where is it? Make it accessible and also de-identify it too. So if just for research, you don't really need to know who the patient is. You just need to know the counts to say, okay, it seems likely that in this zip code there's more asthma than say over here. This part over here is more development, so data access. So we try to build facility to, okay, if you don't want to come to us and wait in line for first come, first serve for information from an analyst, build facilities like a semantic layer or just accessing the database, or we build data warehouses that this team, basically data engineers, build for that. And then the operations side is operating the databases every day, make sure they're populated. And also we have product owners. So that's what I get into a little bit is we adopted that an agile methodology for going through like iterative development, especially with when we're going through the data architecture and presentation side.
So for a little bit of background on my career, so I work at Penn Medicine now. I've been there since 2013. I've been to a couple other places, but primarily I was at QVC before I came to Penn. So I came from e-commerce into healthcare, new. And for me, I think that's great because I like challenge of new learning. So let's say in the past for QVC, loved working there, but it was more like WWJD, what would Joan do, you know, if Joan Rivers? No? Aha, uh-huh, yeah, okay. All right, I'll work on that joke. So I worked there for 12 years, loved working there, but, you know, working at Penn now is, you know, there's a much more, you know, we're not directly taking care of patients or helping them, but we're helping somebody who's helping them. So it's a much more inspiring mission to be a part of the mission we have at Penn Medicine. The other key thing about, which I think the call about Penn is you're part of an organization that down the bottom here, they had Time Magazine's Man of the Year. I think we all know who the main Man of the Year was, but there's also other nominations, and that was the CRISPR team. Researchers and clinicians, and part of that was Dr. Carl June and his team, who have been developing ways to do immunotherapy. Basically, how can you take your own immune system, instead of having your immune system attack biogens in your own body, to go after cancer cells? So they say, okay, use a CRISPR engine, which is a way you can edit DNA and program your immune system, basically your white blood cells, to seek out and destroy cancer cells. And it's something evolving, but we've had some success with both at CHOP and at Penn Medicine in taking care of leukemia. It was, I think, the first successes they've had, the stage 4 leukemia. It's pretty much, if you're at that stage, there's not really many options you have. So anyway, it's just good to be part of a group like that where they actually are in the mission. Even Carl June would say, okay, I don't want to hear about curing cancer, but you're certainly trying to put it off for a while if you can, but really part of a great mission there. And as being a part of a nonprofit, we also have the opportunity to, compared to a for-profit world when I worked elsewhere, you can share out what you're doing. Like I can come here and I can tell you the things we worked on. And because of that, we also had submitted twice to Information Week for top 100. We honestly were surprised. The first year we got top 9 for a information discovery app we built, and the next year was in partnership with the data science team we have locally. Basically, we're providing the data, but they build an app called Penn Signals, which is like an early warning detection of, let's say, you're in the hospital and there's an infection you can acquire if you're sometimes hooked up to a lot of devices called sepsis, which is a terrible condition to slip into. But anyway, this will be an early warning to say, okay, I need to interfere and take care of this patient. So, but anyway, so it's just really great to be part of that. And oh, by the way, being a Villanova grad, needed to bring a Villanova help to help manage the team. So, but data governance. So overall, what I'm trying to describe here is, you know, it's iterative, right? So somehow you have to make it real, right? So data governance isn't just a one-way unilateral discussion of, okay, this is what you're going to do and clean up your data and get organized. And it's you need to continue to evolve it. Once you see how people are using the data, then you have to change maybe your governance rules and structure and how you keep up. And also keep that cycle small, not, you know, every year we do something, just make it more engaging. So the first step is organization. Like, how do you get people around to make decisions to say, well, what exactly do we agree on? Is the common language here? What are the standards we should follow? So you need some support and buy-in from leadership. And that's the first phase I'm going to go through. And then we're going to talk about how you aggregate the data and then have some examples of how you're trying to put governance into action, meaning take the governance you've laid out and then how do you actually put it into works. So organization, I don't know if you can see on here, if you look at the top underneath, the top box is senior IT governance. So overall governance we have in place. IT leadership meets with leadership of Penn Medicine to go over alignment of the far left box is, says SOM, that's School of Medicine. So how we align and help the School of Medicine. There's a clinical IT governance, which is basically, as you can imagine, the hospital and clinical workflows, making sure that whatever we're developing and optimizing for them is what they're looking for. Business IT governance, that would be administrative side, you know. And then the last is now we have a fourth box, analytics governance. So we have a forum where we meet every month with leadership from Penn Medicine, say, here's what we're working on, here's what's coming up, and if we have questions about directionally where we should go, this is a group we go to. But if we don't have this, then you're taking guesses of where you're trying to take this group to go, because everybody wants data, everyone has a different format, but to go grassroots up, sometimes it makes sense, but to go and trying to get different departments across Penn Medicine to agree all unilaterally how the data is defined is not going to happen. You need someone from maybe a CX level down to help with that. So that's organizationally we have set up. And also what we're evolving into is setting up domain groups now. Now we have leadership, we also get working groups that meet in particular areas that which are on here. But so clinical measures, quality measures, patient satisfaction, do surveys all the time. How did the patient experience, what was the experience when they came through our system? And were they happy, or were there improvements we need to work on, financial? But all these different domains have subject matter experts who are part of those domain groups that are going to work with us on the IT side. We have an architect on our side who will basically try to document all these definitions and then turn that into something we can make, whether it be a data warehouse or whether it be some way to access this data so that make it live. So that's kind of really the boring part. But then also the aggregation of the data. I mean, you have to consolidate all the time. In our case, on the far left is our EMR, electronic medical record. And we have one, actually just as of 2 weeks ago, I think we're the first academic medical center that now has one EMR system, which is great. Because that, by nature, helps you with data governance, because once you do that, well, all the definitions inside that platform are standard, and also all your definitions are the same as anyone else that has that same software. So it really tries to help drive alignment. But the columns of, okay, if you're trying to get to that idea of self-service, how you can get people to pull their own information out of this world of data that we have, I mean, you need to stack into these major columns and keep reinforcing them, I guess, to, you know, build them up. But finance, patient access means, again, scheduling, what was the survey results we got back from patients, research, and also external data. So parties like regulations, Medicare, Medicaid, other hospitals, anything that would be external data. There are lots of parties we have to integrate with or share data out to. This is just give an overview of most of the data that we have. So the big blue drum in the middle is Penn Data Store. That's our main enterprise data warehouse. That's where we pull in from a number of systems up top, which could be from anywhere, into one big drum where it works. Now, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, we simplified into one EMR, so some of those cylinders up top is now half, right, which really simplifies our world, but still the picture's the same of how we try and funnel into one major warehouse. We also have another warehouse, which is a vendor product called HPM, but that is for financial purposes only. And then we have data marts, spares data marts underneath for SDS's strategic decision support. So in finance, how do we, across all the hospitals, which have different CFOs and different operations, there's this corporate finance group which ties together all this into one so that we can have the one view of how PEMS is operating. Quality data mart, similar initiative. So we have quality running at every single one of the hospitals, how do we make sure that they're all being accountable to how they're operating? Are the infections low, readmissions back in the hospital are low, staying on top of that. Taking a step from, I mentioned Penn Data Store, then 2-3 years ago, the next step taken was another warehouse. It's a big red drum in the middle, Panomics, which is our research data warehouse. So building upon the strength of which is our EMR data in Penn Data Store, taking that, bringing that data into the big red drum, and then mixing that with other data like our tumor registry, basically for anyone who has cancer and has a tumor and it was taken, there's a registry somewhere organizing who's in it, and also we take that data, bring it into the Panomics data warehouse, biobanks, cancer registries, a whole host of others. But the point of this is to be a research data warehouse where Penn Data Store is more of the benefit of the people who work in the health system primarily. I mean, some research happens there, but this is meant more for researchers to go into. The reason it has Panomics is because it's play on words, genomics, Penn, genomics, Panomics. So what's interesting here is that the thing about healthcare is, at least in my opinion, by strict definition, healthcare is not quite at big data just yet. And we have lots of data, and we have complicated data, just like anyone else, but there's not like, you know, analyzing a Twitter feed from across all over the place. It's not like huge volumes that you'd find like that. And that's true also for this data, because right now research is just starting to get into DNA, which if you sequenced every bit of your DNA, it would probably be, I think, a couple gigabytes of information just for one person. One cell of one person be that much. If we started actually all that amount, then okay, this would be enormous, right? But really all we store in here is people aren't looking at every single, they don't know what to make of it just yet. That's what we need to help facilitate, is how get researchers to dive into the DNA and find, okay, when they have this sequence inside their DNA, that equates to, if they have this kind of disease, a therapy like this medication works better than another. So the idea of precision medicine is really what's developing here. So right now it's not big data, but eventually this could build into, maybe we do store the sequences in here, but for now it's the markers. If as they start growing and people are finding new indications of, okay, whenever someone has this marker, that means that they could benefit specifically from this medication. So instead of the general of, okay, if you have the flu or you're cold or something, you basically get the same medication as someone else has cold. In this case, if you have a certain disease, it's more precisely to you what would be benefit to you. So this is meant to be a platform to grow that. So it's slowly evolving. But as the everything changes in that world, the research of genomics, it's fast. But until it settles down, that's only when we can get involved. Say, okay, let's build a model to fit all that data into. So basically, once it's accepted that it's really something that could benefit patients or even healthcare, Penn or anywhere else. In this picture, just showing aggregate of basically the data warehouses we have. So I mentioned it before, but if you look at in the middle there, we have Penn Data Store, again Panomics, and then there's like various data marts, and pretty much we're trying to develop a self-service area out of top here. So basically through our enterprise reporting platform, and also through some in-memory databases, trying to really facilitate for the more data-hungry people, really. Want to get more in-depth analysis, they would come in through this level here. And also from all these various sources we're aggregating into these data marts now. And as I mentioned, that kind of building the pillars that we have of both our EMR data, our financial data. So it's a lot, but it's also trying to keep it simple, you know, so that basically you want to make it that you don't have to worry about where the data lives, that really just concentrate, people can go to the business intelligence layer and go in to get their data that way. But that's easier said than done. So, governance in action. So, all that is, okay, fun. But really, where we're trying to make it, you can't just say, okay, here's where the governance is, and here are the rules we're going to follow, and definitions we're going to follow. You really got to help with people want to use governance or want to use things that are structured and built so that it actually helps make their lives easier. So basically governance in action, the reason I have the image up there is kind of step and pivot, right? So as you learn as you go. And to pull it off, you really kind of, I believe, have to adopt agile analytics. So just taking basic concepts of, say, agile development and applying that to analytics, which I think growing, I see more places like this. But say 4 years ago, the concepts of agile and analytics shop really kind of alien to each other. But you need to be model agile, process agile, means like how you adapt and change your priorities as needed, organizationally and technology too. Which I'll get into is that the technology can also be a hindrance to your speed to turn around and deliver data to the people that really need it. So one key concept in overall agile, which is a book that is pretty decent, it's called A Lean Startup. And the basic concept is try and focus on learnings. Try and focus on, you're going to do everything, it's almost like everything you do should be a little tiny experiment. So you're not quite sure if something's going to work or not, it's okay to fail, but just try it, like get the minimum requirement out there so that someone can get feedback and say yes or no. Do we go this way or do we scrap it and go another way? Yes?
I don't know if Chester County is your most recent acquisition, but what does an acquisition of another hospital in that system do to, frankly, everything you've talked about? How long does it take to get every one electronic medical record or this agile development to work?
Yeah, it's so actually agile helps a lot because there are so many interfaces, so many data feeds that you have to pull in. You first to assess what are they, and then break them down into manageable, bite-sized chunks that you can then work through, as opposed to a monolithic project of say 6 months and I'll see you later. And it's all based on priority too, like what's more important. Okay, let's focus on integration of maybe quality metrics. Let's focus on integration of the financial data, but it's all based on breaking it down for people to go through the process, and I'd say you get more value sooner, right? So those higher things come out sooner because you focused on you broke it down into little pieces and they start that way. So in Chester County's case, it all comes down to resources available, but at least we can go through without a huge monstrous project, integrating them over time. And so we're going through that, we're trying to consolidate on common tools, common platforms, that's also key. Common definitions, as long as you have those things, you can't just let the hospital X that comes along, if they have local definitions, well, we have to work out what are the gaps there. Do they adopt to what we already have in place, or should we adjust our enterprise rules? But as long as you have those things in place, it helps facilitate. Otherwise, you're just building a one-off, and that's where it gets unwieldy. I hope that answers.
Yeah. Thanks.
So, but overall, if you're trying to focus on what the minimum viable product is, just this key concept of you build something, you measure how well it worked, then you learn from it, and then you decide what you're going to do next. Just keep going like that. So instead of analytics, typically is more like, okay, let's take a year to build a data warehouse. There's not enough time to do that. Research is changing, needs are changing, and you got to keep up. So one example I want to go through is unstructured data, although I have uncrossed out because really I don't believe there is such a thing as unstructured data. It's all semi-structured data. No matter what data you find, you can just find random words. I guess there's the monkeys typing in a typewriter and they could eventually, after 1,000 years, produce Shakespeare or something. But you don't just find random words laying around. There's always some context to it. So that's why it's always semi-structured. So lots of information out there. One challenge I had when it started here 3 or 4 years ago was the immense notes that are out there in the clinical world. So anatomic pathology, study of maybe tumors and disease. Like, there's all these write-ups and essays that they write that they have to go through. Many words and many diagnoses and findings are in there that are hard to get to unless you actually read it yourself. Administered outpatient meds, outpatient encounters. These are basically when you go to the practice facility, there's doctor's notes, radiology reports, observations from when you take your x-ray or MRI, prescribed medications, echocardiograms. It's just a ton of information. We had about over 30 million documents of unstructured text, each probably pages and pages by themselves. And there was requests, how do we get access into something usable out of this data. So taking that approach of, okay, what could we learn from other industries? In this case, taking an example from e-commerce world, there's a tool that used to drive most sites. Amazon builds their own search engine, but there's, when you go through a website, no one explains to you how to search and find products. You just go to the website and you intuitively either put a keyword in or you're using a faceted nav down usually the left side of the page to narrow down a department or filter down by shoe sizes or whatever it is. So why doesn't that concept work with the unstructured data that we have? So basically the idea is take a solution like that, apply it to these unstructured notes, and then can we find that there's a use out of that? Can we find useful, actionable information out of these unstructured notes now that are kind of laying dormant? And at Penn, we have to label everything. We don't call it by the vendor name, so we have to call it a Penn name, so we call it PennSeek. So we'll see if this is something that will be viable. So minimum viable product number one. Basically, what's the big deal? How can we allow people to go and navigate and access information in an unstructured way? And in this case, we took anatomic pathology, notes from studies of masses taken out of people, or basically, what can we find in that unstructured data that would be of use? Can navigation help? So overall, we found that clinicians were very happy with it. They loved the tool. They loved going through and it's easy access to information. But the use case was a little off because they were basically just looking at it as a workflow tool to optimize, oh, how many assays did this researcher get through or this clinician versus did they actually get something out of the notes themselves? So basically, preserve or pivot, make that decision point. We did this. What did we learn? Well, let's steer a little bit away. But there's something still of value here to work looking into. So like, but in terms of results, right? So the PennSeek app, for example, here's an example where you can see this example of a blob of notes that are out there just for one patient, one anatomic pathology note. And you put a keyword in, you'll get back a highlight of where the words live in the text. Basically, this is access they didn't have before. Here in the facet nav, just an example. These are not real. These are, Dragon Pox Syndrome, if you're a Harry Potter fan, that's, we can't share real patient data here, so we have to make things up. But anyway, here on the facet nav is a way they can actually search for keywords, or they can filter down by diagnosis codes, or they can filter down by demographics, or whatever it is they want. So again, similar concept to online shopping. It's not to trivialize the whole method, but really it's a simple paradigm. Yes?
Would this search be then hitting everything in your enterprise data warehouse, or is it going back to the operational systems? How big is that library it's going after?
Yeah, so what I'm going to walk through maybe a couple of slides. Mm-hmm. This is, right now I'm showing an example of just anatomic pathology, right? So again, we started small. So there was we could start big. Let's bring all the data in. And then we're trying to figure, how do we bring this all together so that some is useful to the broader audience? We didn't know what was useful or not, right? So we said, let's just start with anatomic pathology. So we started there, got the use case kind of refined, and then, like I said, we learned that, okay, you can't just go in there. It's not just structured, unstructured text by itself now being unearthed. It's not the value. You got to develop that use case better. But we do eventually tie it together across, but I'll get to that in a second. This is just an example of the front end. Again, you're just getting basic charts and things like you got demographics of what's the age, a histogram of the age of the patients, and what's the gender breakdown. But overall, there's information that's useful. But the use case that really was a value was the second one. And this one was looking at a shingles research. So we had a group that was coming in, and what their problem or use case was they're trying to solve in rheumatology, dermatology. They're looking for, in the notes, they don't have any way in the EMR that they could discreetely store it. They were putting it embedding in notes and not all in the standard way. What is the size of an infection of, say, psoriasis? And then for those, what kind of medication they're prescribed, what was the dosage amount, and how effective was it in shrinking the size of the area? But all that is in the notes. It's not discreetly stored in the actual EMR. Now, if you did this right, they'd put it into the EMR directly as a discrete field and everything. But what we learned here is that we could pull out, as you show here, there's a list of the drugs, right? So there's the actual name. Now, first of all, not everyone's great at spelling these trademark names, right?
And then at the complement, we had a lookup table that we added to this product to provide back the generic.
So we provide back the generic, it kind of standardizes all the data, even though it's all unstructured. And then the dosage amounts were also extracted.
So now if we put that into the same screen, but you can see discreetly, here are all the amounts and dosages that were used.
And so this was really a couple things for them. This is where it really started to take shape that this is a value because, one, it identified for these clinicians that they didn't have a standard process or workflow. Everyone was doing this documentation a different way. They also realized they need to do this better inside the EMR, discreetly store it. But now they could actually get to the findings without having to read every single patient's record, even if they're patients that really don't apply to the cohort that they're worried about. So that really started off in terms of showing the effectiveness of this. And then currently, so yeah, I don't know if you can see that, but kind of like the question we just had. So then we moved on. Okay, we found a success here with using the provider's notes, and then we, okay, what about, let's add radiology, and let's add on anatomopathology. And all these are different silos of unstructured notes, but through the strength of our enterprise data warehouse, this is where the governance comes through, they all have a common patient identifier. So you thread it through, that's why I have a screw up there. Through using our data warehouse, we could tie together all these different notes into one view. So now you can have people who live in the radiology shop talking to the anatomopathology shop and vice versa about, oh, I see these patients, but they also had a radiological exam I need to look at and then share back and forth and actually collaborate more. So this was a big step. Yep. Yeah, you know, that's actually interesting. So the difference here is, I guess, NLP, natural language processing, definitely comes up. And there's a misnomer, I say a misnomer, with the medical community. They go to natural language processing first. They think that's the solution to managing unstructured text. Well, the first step is really, how do I narrow in on the patients I care about or these people that I care about? Then you apply natural language processing or text analysis. So we're at that stage now, but to do text analysis on everything, the ocean first, right? You need to get to the smaller amount first and then zero in on. So this overall was what we presented this to, okay, our case, and this we're all surprised. Got ninth place at Information Week's, like, our award, top 100 award we have is, you're phenomenal that we had that honor. So, but it's also great to take something from another area, another industry, apply it here locally and see it take shape again. And also, you know, the benefit of what you're trying to help patients and researchers trying to basically make fast conclusions. But basically where data was no longer being accessible, now it is. Being dormant, now it's active. And also tying together with the enterprise data warehouse we have, it made all this unstructured data tie together. Because if you did this in isolation, okay, here's a search app for just anatomopathology, or here's a search app for just radiology, or you could do that, but the power is really now you can thread it across everything and get the whole view. So so the next use case I have is basically data cell service, where we're at, how we're trying to help make that a reality. And for us, the image I have is, data is constantly moving. This is a picture of the tectonic plates of the Earth. All right, so imagine we have our enterprise data warehouse. I mentioned we have our EMR. What our EMR did only have outpatient data at one point. We had another system that had the inpatient, and then we just went through a two-year effort to consolidate everything into one EMR, so that's good, but still that means massive movements of data that affects everything downstream. We'll need some way to keep data access simple, right? Some layer on top, while we do all this massive work underneath to consolidate and aggregate data underneath. So that's a use case we're trying to go through. And also, just in general, the dev cycle for a typical analytics job is just way too long, right? Usually months. If you just want to get a date, you want to see if I brought this data, say quality data, and merged it with financials, and I want to see the cost of an infection at Hampton Hospital, okay, it'd probably be like 3 months of work. Take this one and take that one and map them together and make another data mart. That's a traditional way. So we need to take this cycle and go like this. So typically, this is an example of what you'd usually go through. a traditional warehouse, you're building out, obviously, your logical data model, but then maybe your logical data model doesn't perform well. Maybe if data is slow coming out of it, it's great that it's all modeled perfectly, but it's not responsive enough. So you build summary tables, you build indexes, you build all these processes on top, which is what the stack is showing on the right, that add labor and time we have to set up. And then by the time you actually share that back, it's like, was this useful? No, okay, sorry. So then go back and then, so you don't have time to experiment. And basically, how do you do this? Most of it seems to be, okay, we could be as agile as we want in terms of process, right? But the technology isn't there. Like the responses of building these data sets together, it's just too slow. So you wait a long time to find out results. So the big vision is, how can we make this a smaller cycle, other options out there? And then there's some things that I'm hearing about, like in-memory columnar databases that could really soup up like how this works. And have vendors, I think, in SAP. Okay, so I admit, we're an SAP.
A lot of guys.
And I would get to pitch every so often, you should try it. Okay, so we'll try it. And this was like unbelievable. Like, we took data, we put it into this system. We had existing pre-existing data marts that were out there that when we linked them together, it wasn't like, okay, I can actually have a sitting session in a room, take data together, work with the analyst in the room, joining together the data, and then show the results immediately. Talking about millions of rows coming back in seconds, where it would take, say, tens of minutes in the past. So that way I could find out, is it worth doing that match in the first place before I even get that invested into it? So it's just crazy how much the benefit was of taking it, take a relational database layer and then making it so that now you have this bang, right? And this is a selling point mostly for the analysts that we work with, but for us, all the other benefit was the virtualization, right? To take the data from all these different sources, like I said, moving data over the place, well, they can be fixed access point up top in, say, your column in-memory platform layer. Well, everything's moving down here. These don't have to know. It just go through the main gateway up top. So we get the benefit of, okay, we don't have to keep changing all the front-end stuff. We just keep it consistent. And in this case, also, this draws people to want to use this stuff. Now it's like there's a buzz of, oh, I want everything in HANA. Well, okay, let's talk about that. But the benefit is basically they want to come and now use this, and it kind of drives a little bit of governance with it. They all want to go to the same source and use it. Versus when it was slow, or they would just take their own data, put an Excel sheet, work it locally, and because it's quicker. But in this case, you'd be quicker to use the data centrally. So this is overall that vision we're trying to pull together. So whether it be virtually linking tables in from all our data sources or physically putting them in, get the performance benefit out of it. All the data from lower systems are now pulled together. And in the case of questions about, say, Chester County, we didn't have this platform then, so definitely integration takes longer. But our next iteration, where we say LGH has been there for a year, we assume we're going to use HANA's integration layer for that, and then our time to do this will be much smaller, right? Because one is also a big benefit, again, governance comes to play. We have the same EMR as Lancaster, same data models. So now we can bring them locally into the in-memory platform like this, and it's smaller effort to make them look like one consistent source information, basically give you the whole PenMeds and picture. So, overall benefits was the cycle time shrank. So we went from the left where we talk about months, now we're down to days and weeks in terms of when people want more data for another purpose of analytics, it's quicker turnaround. And it's okay to fail. It's okay to, before you wouldn't venture in a project if you thought there was a risk of failure or it wouldn't work. Now it's like, okay, let's give it a shot and see if it has a benefit. So, and overall it gets benefits of various visualizations that now we can build. So that, trying to push this out to, okay, our shop can help with presentation, but by giving people ability to see and interact with this data, they can also publish their own dashboards and reports. But it's all tied back to a common structure, so it's okay. It's okay that they're building their own dashboards because the data is consistent. If it's a matter of, okay, they're pulling their own data locally, then yeah, okay, you might be reporting something different than another department. But our key role here is at least make sure that the data is out there, accessible, and defined in a common way. That makes it easier to kind of trivializes the visual side is, okay, just go ahead and make your own reports and dashboards to explain your story. So, and this overall, like what our next steps, there's a lot on here, but really the main layer is, okay, say we have in-memory layer up top, which is for access. We have our traditional relational database layer, which is through the middle, which is our tradition we had there for a long time. And we're trying to like, simplify it as much as we can. And then tacking on the bottom would be a Hadoop layer that basically we'll use for things like instrumentation data, the unstructured data I talked, anything that's raw or really unprocessed, and we just don't know if it's worth taking this data and modeling it into a schema just yet. But basically it's a three-layer stack. But for most people, they want to come in through the top and have simplified access. But then of course there are also people like data scientists who, well, they only work in Python. So they take data and they pull it, they want to work in a Hadoop type structure, which is fine. But as long as we all threads together and ties back to an enterprise data warehouse, it's there's no worry about that. So, but that's where it continually evolves. So overall, it's a big picture. I guess in summary, really, the point is, okay, you can put the data governance in place, lay out all the plans and the strategy about your data governance, but you do have to, it's not just process and also people, it also comes down to the technology too can be a hindrance. So in some aspects, you need the technology to help keep people aligned with that governance, keep aligned with, okay, where we're going, and also want to draw them, they want to use that in the first place. But you can do pretty innovative things as long as you, basic concept, you try, you fail, and you find out where you're going to, you have to fail a few times to find out what the win is. But before any old WIP method, you'd spend a lot of time to find out later that, okay, it didn't work or it did work. You need to shrink that time down. So, and I'd be remiss, you know, I put the pen shield up and I have to show, okay, so I went to Villanova and I still can't get over that shot. So, all right, well, thank you. Yeah, there's many initiatives actually. It seems like who's going to really be the driver to pull all these, whether it be health systems together or in a case of clinical trials is another example where it's very helpful to share data with pharmaceuticals who they're looking for, well, are there patients out there that have a certain disease or diagnosis and have they taken a certain medication and was it effective or not? So, and there's also this pull and play, you typically have to de-identify the data if you're going to share information in a setting like that. So there are some things that, like we're part of probably three or four at least groups that we send de-identified data to in sort of like a brokerage or a network. But not one has really taken off, okay, this is where everyone's really going to fold into. But I think, I don't know if it's government or whatever the driving force is, or something needs to pick a winner here. But yes, there's all kinds of initiatives to share data. But of course, we're only going to share it with groups for the right reasons, right? We want to make sure we protect the identity of the patients themselves. And hopefully it's all about the outcomes of the patient, not necessarily, I just want to know more demographics on what patients are out there and for some other reason. Yeah. It's a tough question. We've been a panel that I'm aware of and certainly been focused on it for a while. it feels like a couple years away. I don't know about five. I don't know. I know. I think 10 is too far away. So I think it's soon. But to your point, it's what is precision medicine? Is precision medicine the fact that I go to my doctor and then after I had a genetic test, based on that, here are some predictors of what could be things you should look out for, or for your particular disease, here are therapies that work for you. In some cases, those things are known, but we need more examples of what kind of diseases are out there that can be identified through your, what they say, genotype, through your markers inside your DNA to turn into a phenotype. Phenotype being a observable characteristic, not at the level of your DNA. So how do you marry up the genotype to the phenotype? When you have that marriage, it then turns into, once the researchers find that, like so we say our research data warehouse, maybe the store put it in there, then we got to put it in the EMR. And once it's in the EMR, then someone like an oncologist or someone else can say, this is the disease they have, this is what stage you're at, based on this, here's the medication they should get. For them, it should just be, this is what you need, right? Well, the research has to happen, so that's what has to tie together, but I think it's process is one. The other aspect I think that's out there just always, at least underestimated from my point of view, when I've gone to different conferences and they talk about precision medicine, is just the ethical side of it. If there's a way to guarantee that, this patient, for this disease, here's prescribed medications, that's good, but some people don't want to know about other things, like, there's a high likelihood maybe you have a disease that if you had it, you really couldn't do anything about it anyway. So why would you change your outlook on life on the probability that it could happen versus not happen? So it's funny, going to different conferences, I hear people who are in this field and they say, I will never get my DNA sequenced. And it seems, flooring to me, but in some cases, that's truth. In some cases, it's like, no, this helps advance science and it makes sense. But I think the biggest barriers are not necessarily technology, it's probably the process and all that comes with the ethical side of it. And also, our providers worry about doctors. Are they worried about, I didn't predict them well enough? Are they now liable for the fact that they weren't predicting health outcomes properly? That's a possibility too. So I think it's just some of those things do come up when these conversations happen. But in the end, I think it does make sense that, sequence your DNA, helps advance science, find more advanced, but certainly there could always be some bad outcomes or manipulation of this stuff that could happen, so. Try over here. Yeah. Thank you. Automatically, I have to stay part of the team. So, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But for that whole shingles and the unstructured or semi-structured data, is there an end to that story about what happened in terms of the physicians coming up with different protocols, or so is there a happy ending where all of a sudden, shingles patients now it's a tighter protocol and they're getting cleared faster?
Yeah. In the shingles case, I do know examples of that's true. There's also in cardiology some examples where we've saved lots of time for people to find, say, genetic, familial cholesterol, basically high cholesterol that you inherit from your family versus just how you. So anyway, there's evidence in notes that they can find that. But to be honest, this is where tying back to the idea of agile and product development idea that you should be developing something for a purpose, right? So everybody comes, I want data. And where we need to be, our team needs to be better at, what did you actually do with that data? Because it helps justify, if you want more data, and executives on our side are like, why am I spending more money? Everyone has data. And every time we get more data, it seems like they want, we give them the more whiz-bang way of getting in information, they want even more. So somehow we got to get more crystallized use cases. But yeah, they're out there, but there's certainly a lot more to be explored and found. Yep?
There was an article in Forbes about 4 weeks ago, MD Anderson had to shut down a $60 million data project, right? So you talk about data governance, but how do they governance your investments and what you do from an informatics perspective?
Okay. Well, that one is that there is a assessment every year. Auditors come in and try to find a value of everything that we're invested in. So that's a whole process to itself. And are people using it? And, you know. But that tying back to that leadership governance I mentioned in the beginning, that's pretty much where we give the, okay, it's like every month we say, well, here's how we're doing. Like through, we had a lot of work we had to go through this EMR consolidation I mentioned that happened over the past 2 years. So I give common updates there about how it's going. Certainly there'll be things or the issues come up, we work through them, but most of it is there. And if I want investment in something, whether it be I need additional staff or I need software to help this case, it's always not just, well, I just need this capability, it's, well, I need this capability to do what? Because to a CFO or someone else, it's always about, why am I spending this money? So yeah, that's why I think starting data governance starts with the leadership tie-in, so that you can present to them, here, I think this investment makes sense, here's a use case behind it, or it'd be providers or some department inside the MS and saying, here, making that case with you. But it's a trap for IS or IT to get involved in. Well, I think it's really great and you stand alone because it's just, no one's gonna wanna invest in that, right? You need a use case behind it.
Given the state of flux that we're in, as a healthcare industry, how much of your, at a big system like Penn, much of your data analytics and reporting sort of focuses on, I'm oversimplifying here, but the old way of doing things, fee-for-service medicine.
Yeah.
The more you do, the more you get paid over, versus the future, which probably best described as population health.
Yeah.
Keeping the healthy, the chronically ill from acutely ill, and those kinds of things where, you know, the value, you know, distinguishing between high value and low value becomes important.
Yeah, so we, population health, I'm sure this happens in every health system across the country, keep having discussions about, okay, where do we go next population? How do you help the population around you or keep them from coming in the hospital in the first place? By, you know, observing, again, are there certain areas that have diseases that are more prominent, or are there some way we could be out more in a clinic fashion, helping patients in neighborhoods to check their vitals, their BMI, or whatever scores, and make sure they know that they're healthy or not? But population health, as an example, is, so from our standpoint, we're actually working through right now, population health is a mixture of, you need, well, you have your EMR, but you also, where we can, we need data from, say, the insurance companies. Because where did they go if it didn't come to Penn? Penn is mostly a specialty or tertiary care. So they probably went after they had maybe some major surgery. I mean, they came from or went to somewhere else that, if they come back to us as, say, a readmission, it's like, was that from us, or was there something else outside that caused that to happen? So it's a mixture of outside data, pulling in, looking at the population around you, and then what exactly are you going to target to try and help improve population health overall? So we are trying to aggregate that together now, but from our standpoint, we're trying to look at what is it that what we want to focus on in that analysis. But I think for every health system, it's the same concept. Like, how do we have to negotiate with the insurance companies to get that information, you know? Because, you know, we'll see where they went to in another health system, not in our hospital. Is there any information that we need to know that would that help that? So, but overall, population health, it sounds, next year, honestly, for our group, will probably be a focus, but we're trying to get down to what are those use cases we want to drill into that would make it useful. And as for changes, I think the way you don't get nervous about that or sweat that is the fact, well, there's always changes. So I'm going through a project right now where there's regulatory requirements where I have to send information to CMS for making sure all the Medicare patients, we've checked them for eye exams, we checked them for diabetic exams, we checked them for BMI, and then we have to prove that as an audit back to CMS to say we're making meaningful use of the electronic medical data we have. And maybe that program morphs into something else next year, but we still always have to take from our core set of data, put it into some sort of format and then send it to another third party so that they can check us. So whatever happens coming up, it's still going to move from service to like episodes of care or bundles. That is going to happen. So that's going to be, how do we identify what an episode is, right? Instead of just one encounter coming in, seeing your provider, and that's a transaction, it's, okay, so for this disease, basically here's what the overall payment's gonna be and tracking how well we were with managing within that. So in terms of logically defining it, that is also a next step for us. How do we define the rules that group everything into these episodes versus just everything right now is primarily based on encounter-based, service-based. But again, unsolved, but it's something we just got to tackle next. Yep.
Hi, I'm Wanda Talia Farrell from the Land Hunt Management Consulting. And you cited a statistic about electronic medical records in UPenn. What was that again?
I don't remember.
The first academic medical center?
Oh, yeah. So the fact that we consolidated outpatient medical records and inpatient medical records onto one system, first academic medical center, meaning like university with a health system, yeah, okay. Teaching hospital.
So how do you stack up against other similar, your peers, in other words, relative to that?
Oh, we're the best, right? No. in terms of what...
would be like the Jefferson Hospital system?
Well, okay. I don't know if I should rank against,
you
know.
You
we're pretty good.
Generally about EMR and the state of EMR and how well we're advancing.
Yeah, so whereas, in that case, I would say definitely Penn, a leader, like first to adopt to the EMR and consolidate together, whereas other health systems are in the stage of trying to catch up and consolidate, right? So we have the strength of, we have all the medical records tied together into one system, and then that I believe really kind of accelerate even more hyperbolic all that we could do because the data is already tied together for us. We don't have to spend that effort anymore to knit it together. But yes, all the other health systems are, not all of them, I'm sorry. There's still some health systems working through the stages of still working on that. But the ones that are already consolidated together, there's an advantage because even smaller health systems are probably looking at, well, can I really go through that effort of pulling us all together, or should I go with a larger health system that's already have this system working? And so it's, in a way, it seems like the bigger getting bigger in that sense. Yep.
So I have two questions. First one, what's the fish in the Penn logo for?
What is this, trick? You know, I know the fish is in. I should know this.
You're wondering the same thing over here.
So, second question.
You never saw the logo, so the chevron so big that you never thought there's a fish in there.
Yeah.
It's actually, I think it's a dolphin.
Yeah, look, that's what I was wondering.
I looked it up one time. I said it's something to do with Ben Franklin and
so
experiments.
The second question is when you were talking about a subunit asking for more data, always wanting more data, and also the big picture of people deciding whether an investment is benefiting. Do you have some kind of process for specifying, you got, at the end of a chunk of work, somebody who would know that, giving some assessment of, well, this actually, this part of it helped, this part of it didn't?
Current state is, so for report requests, the basic stuff, that's the first come, first serve. Other areas, we have dedicated resources that we say agree, they'll fund a resource on our team, a full-time equivalent on our team or whatever, that we said, you'll have two equivalents from our group doing work for your area. Whether it be building databases, data warehouses, or doing reports or whatever, we just concentrate that way. So we have different channels like that. But yes, we also get bigger projects come up, and it's a matter of, if we think we need to reprioritize based on the resource we have, or we think we need an incremental headcount, that's when we go to leadership and say, here's this department we're working with now, and they have a need, and they think they need a person, indefinitely added to our team to help them, and basically, we'll show what the cost is and say, what's the return, right? Return may be financial, or return may be simply improved clinical outcomes, quality outcomes.
So that's looking forward, but do you then have a process that looks back and says, well, what was the benefit, not necessarily in an accounting way, but someone to make that kind of judgment of, well, what was worth it?
Yeah, I think so. I would say we're going through that now, where we've been past 2 years in our own team, tracking our hours, where we spend our hours. And now we can show, this is where we spend all our hours. Can we go back to those groups and say, so all that stuff we built for that, is it really worthwhile? And, just because we honored an agreement in the past, that's where leadership gets involved. Say, I don't know. maybe the, whatever group that is, Cancer Center might benefit more from having more people dedicated to it, so let's shift research. Or you know what? This is important, but Cancer Center is important too, so let's add more. So that, yeah, we'll get, that's where we get the buy-in of the governments. Prioritization? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Yeah, pre-authorization process.
Okay. And the question, I'm sorry, in regards to...
Yeah, I'm sorry, maybe I didn't ask a good question. So I was trying to ask, because you talk about the diagnostic process, right? So difference between the medical record and the German, like how the patient is being treated. So is there the same process for the pre-authorization process as well to determine whether the patient is qualified before the surgery in full?
Yeah, well, this is probably what gets into, I'm a person that plays with data at a hospital. So I don't get into what goes into saying, making sure that they are authorized to go to the surgery, but certainly have, so our EMR system does have various modules for, I mean, working in a hospital is not just as simple as, it's not just one group, right? There's so many different groups that have needs. And then there is a, we have something for surgery, a particular module that organizes information about it, but we do have specifically data and modules that track and have workflows around that. But as for what goes through decision making, not necessarily our group getting involved in that. We just kind of help with, okay, here's what happened when they came through the system and the workflow to go through. But we would, obviously that comes from the clinicians involved with the surgeries and the reviews to make sure that they're the ones that weigh in on that decision. Is that what your question was? Okay. Yep.
I had a question, maybe building on what was said earlier in terms of, so you get all these the data increases year over year, right? It gets more complex. And how does the ability of your users stack up to actually take advantage of that? And maybe what do you do to educate people, right? Kind of like what's available, what's possible?
Yeah. You can only go so fast as the capabilities of those using. Like, yeah. So we could build a really, we think, sophisticated or complicated system that is a great need, but if it doesn't, can't be used, well, what's the point? So as an example, just by nature, you're talking about the Kosology EMR again, all of a sudden it's something like, so far, like since March 4th is when we consolidated, it's like 10 times the amount of usage and reporting out of the EMR than in the past. Now some of that is because we had a separate EMR moved over, but I don't think it was 10 times the amount was over on the inpatient EMR versus our outpatient. There's a huge amount of usage going on right now. So there's mainstream people that for operations and stuff, they just want data for real-time needs, like who are the patients coming in, what am I going to do next? Not analytics, just data access. So that's good. But then there's also groups that, whether it be more analysts or statisticians, okay, I want to take data and put it into something like SAS or something like R, or I'm a data scientist, I want to use it to, they put it, manipulate it through Python. Well, that's not gonna work for everybody. But one is trying to make a stack, which we try and do is, can we make, like say, use that in-memory layer up top as a, make an equal base that everyone can come in through? That's one. And the other we're gonna work on actually now is education, training. We have open office hours. Basically, you need to help explain people through whatever your webinars, but just get out there and explain what's going on. But we actually have an initiative called Analytics on Analytics. So all those people that are hitting reports, well, who are they? What department are they in? Is there a cluster of people using it? And just ask, what are you doing with this? Like, just to help us and learn so that we're hopefully building the right solution. Because in the end, someone's going to call, like, why are we doing all this? Is this even worth it? So it better be. I mean, just because you're clicking a lot of stuff doesn't necessarily mean it's value. So education is going to be our next challenge. So how do you take the IT types in? And we have an education department, so we're going to partner with them to help get out there more outreaching. So.
You said earlier in your talk that you don't feel that healthcare is quite at the level of big data yet. And of course, you've also worked in e-commerce. So I was interested in hearing what distinct features of the healthcare industry do you think prevent healthcare from getting to the level of big data?
don't know if it's prevention, it's just the nature of what it is, but to me, big data, at least, what is it, volume, velocity, veracity? I think that the simplest definition I heard of big data, what makes big data is, well, if you can't possibly bring all the data in together and just analyze all of it at once, instead you have to take a sample of the data and make analysis over that to derive what's going on, what you think outside of that, in the whole world, the whole ocean of that data. The latter is big data. I have all the data. I have every single encounter. I have every single event that's happened at the facility. So therefore, to me, that's not big data. However, if we start getting the genomics, or whether it be Fitbit trackers or other devices like that, we start collecting devices, or we have people connected to the ICU, and today there's data that's hitting the floor, and we're working on how we're going to collect that. That's starting again the big data. So right now, the patient today in a traditional health system, they don't radiate enough data. They only radiate, I came in to see a provider, and that's one encounter, and here's all the descriptions and orders and all the descriptions of that encounter. But then there's going to be, like, say, Fitbit data. We could collect it all, but right now there's not enough. People don't quite know what to do with it yet to make it actionable. But those are examples where it's coming. I think where it's not big data today, healthcare is going to leapfrog over everyone else in terms of big data once it gets into all this other information that we start drilling into. Like, you know, analyzing internet feeds or, you know, Twitter feeds or all the social media, that's big, but that's going to be nowhere as big as, I think the example was if we had 100,000 patients, like basically you take that, again, that diet of a couple gigabytes per patient, well, take Facebook's data centers, like if you took 100,000 patients and took all their DNA information and uploaded it to, it would take over a year to upload it to Facebook's data centers and store it there. But right now there's no use for all of it yet. Someday there will be, and Moore's Law, technology will catch up with it and make it easier to use, but that's where I see the differences. If it's accessible and for a need, yeah, we'll consider bringing it in. Or if it's for research, then the researcher who's connecting with us and saying, I want EMR data out of what they're doing, maybe they have the data if it's small enough that they just do their research locally, tie that data set with it. But some examples of data sets we're at least starting to work with are weather forecasting. Like, can we predict cancellations? I'm trying to think of other examples, but yeah, as more data becomes prominent and publicly available, we'll definitely make use of that and marry it in. But we have to bring it into our system. So.
One last question.
Yeah. I think I should have asked it when I got my first chance. I didn't realize the basics of this law.
Okay.
Sure. You joined UPenn Health 3 years back, and I pretty much showed that I'm an excited by being in the rudimentary stage. Can you walk us through this journey? What it took for you to start from there to come here, and what do you see to achieve, or what do you want to take it to the next in the next 2-3 years? And to kind of generalize this question, if you were asked to kind of start an analytics practice in an organization, how would you approach it? Okay.
Yep.
And also, if you want to leave, and the leadership.
I think I can answer this one in 30 seconds. So.
Big question.
And if leadership were to ask you what would be a realistic timeline for them to reap the benefits of analytic leaders, what would be the realistic
timeline? Well, I guess the answer, I could say stick with the, I know what I know, it may be 3 years to get to self-service like now, but to answer, I guess the simple concept, when I arrived, the reason I was fortunate to get the position at Penn is that there used to be silos of reporting people inside IS, and they brought them together into one group. And then I was lucky enough to be the leader of that group. So it all comes down to try and bring in common people, skill sets, processes, and technology is a major ingredient in trying to make that happen. But you also have to be, again, I prefer agile. I come from the software engineering side and applying it here. So I think you have to be iterative with people and not spend years of time working on something quick learn what it is of value, understand your customers, understand why you're there, understand what you're building, and hopefully it all has a purpose, otherwise you shouldn't do it.
Okay.